I kind of like this time of afternoon for meeting in the summer. It feels like time to wind down and either lie in the hammock or do this.
Or both.
Okay, I hope everybody's on what wants on. And I think we'll begin. And then, you know, if a couple people wander in, then that's fine too. So meeting the demons. So I'd like to start with a few words and then we'll drop into, we'll go in and out of meditation a couple times. So starting from our vow, I vow to set endless heartache to rest, which is just so present and important, keeps rising up. Or another translation that says, greed, hatred, and ignorance rise endlessly. I vow to put them down. Or another translation that says, delusions are numberless. I vow to abandon them. To begin our meditation, I'd like to just start with that first one. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. And let's just do it. What if we listen to the words of one of our wonderful unnamed women ancestors who said, this isn't so hard. What if she's right? What if we can lay this heavy burden down for a little? Let's do it. Just with a breath, we can invite it to rest. Each bit, one by one, to rest right here. We can offer rest to our endless heartache. Why not? Sometimes it feels like the breath, the breathing of meditation is just that, that's what it does. You don't have to add anything to it or take anything away from it. Thank you. Trying to cast things out takes a lot of work and aggressive energy. Right now, sitting here upright with the air moving around us, in the wide space of stillness. We don't have to do that work. Kind of like a Jizo at the door. We can just welcome with kindness what comes and goes. After all, whatever is here, we breathe it in and we breathe it out. That's a freedom we're born with. Sweet. I noticed a few things that I thought I would drop in and then take us back into the meditation. About, I vow to set endless heartache to rest. First one really is, it matters. One way to put that is that when I set down, when I set them to rest, then I have open, available hands. You know, there's a kind of freedom, freedom to respond that's immediately there. There's a movement of the air, the movement of open-handedness. The second is that it's easy to say, harder to do, at least consistently. So I was feeling curious about the whys of that, and not to peg them down, but a couple of things came up. One is, I'm addicted to them. I hate to admit it. But without thinking so, I hold them as a part of who I think I am. I let them kind of define me, the flavor of me, my endless heartaches. My quirk, you know, I think of them sort of as quirks, right? But if you look them, when I look them in the face, it's like, this is not a quirk. You know, this is something I've been carrying for my whole life. So I speak of them casually as if they didn't matter very much. You know, like I might say, oh, I don't have any discipline, you know, and I can just sort of casually say that. And then when I look at it, I think, that's an ache. That's an ache, that belief that I've been carrying forever. Yeah, not so casual. Next thing, why? Another why. Setting heartache to rest might mean letting it rest in me, not someplace else. Can I do that? Am I willing to do that? Another why? Because my approaches don't work and then I give up, right? I think, oh, I know, I'll try this, right? I'll try distraction, you know? I'll try a deep understanding of what my heartaches are. I'll analyze them, you know? I'll, you know, get more exercise. I'll breathe better, you know, whatever, you know. And my approaches don't work, and then I give up. The heartaches seem to be more persistent than I am. Whatever I is, right? Who's the I of this doing, of this vow? Another why? Setting heartache to rest requires me to be willing to have a heart open to it and to recognize that when I truly see mine, my endless heartache, I will truly see yours as well. Ours. And that can be a bit much, or a lot much. One more why. because I'm pretty comfortable except for what hangs out in the shadows. And I have ways of ignoring that most of the time. And so I bet you all know this song, but I thought I would let it in for a minute. So kind of like that. So since it's kind of like that, today I'd like to bring in this old story, very old story. Milarepa lived 1052 to 1135 CE. And he had a really hard childhood and a very dark youth. He was 7 when his father died. Relatives had taken over his father's property, and his family was really treated like slaves. His mother was incredibly bitter and wanted vengeance. Sent him off to train in black magic so that he could do really some serious damage to those who had treated them that way, which he proceeded to do, and destroyed the entire area, as far as I could tell. And then he was devastated. And he looked for help and found it. And, you know, from there on, the story goes with his studies with his teacher, Marpa, who was a pretty harsh teacher, knowing that Milarepa needed to be able to work hard to work through that karma. And so he had him like build towers out of rocks and then tear them down and then build them again and then tear them down. You know, hard labor. And then he went on to be, you know, a great poet and philosopher, and we are descendants. Beholden to him for his teaching. So, you know, he attained his enlightenment, and then he went off and taught. And so from there, I'll take this story into our meditation. Okay. So let's drop back in and let the story land in it. Milarepa had studied and meditated for decades. He traveled the countryside, teaching the practice of compassion and mercy to everyone he met. He faced many hardships, difficulties, and sorrows, and transformed them into the path of his awakening. Like us, he met a lot along the way. Like us, he was ready to rest and find refuge. So he returned to the small hut that he called home. He had carried its memory in his heart through all the years of his journey. Like us, he might not have thought that that refuge would look like a hut lined with demons, but that's what he found, filled with enemies of every kind. Terrifying, horrifying, monstrous demons that would make most people run. And in fact, he tried leaping upon them, chasing after them, tried to get them out of his cave, but they were completely unfazed. The more he chased them, the more they just leaned back and settled in. That didn't work. So he decided to teach them the Dharma kindly. It's what he'd been doing. Maybe that would work. So he took his seat, began teaching about existence and non-existence, compassion and kindness, the nature of impermanence. And after a while, he looked around and they were all still there. They just stared at him with their huge bulging eyes and yawned. Something like what we do in our innards when we try to preach at ourselves. So that didn't work. Inhaling and exhaling slowly three times, he turned then towards his demons, fully present and aware. He looked deeply into the eyes of each, bowing in respect, and said, "You are here in my home now. I honor you and open myself to what you have to teach me." As soon as he uttered these words, all of the enemies except five disappeared. But the ones that were still there were grisly, raw, huge monsters. So Milarepa bowed again and began to sing a love song, really. A song of caring for their suffering and wondering about what they needed, how he could help. A love song. And as the song ended, four of the monsters disappeared. Poof. But the one big old monster that was left was pretty daunting. Huge dripping fangs, flaming nostrils, wide open jaws with a stinky, goopy, black throat inside. Milarepa stepped in close. Breathed deeply into his own belly. And said, I really have to understand your pain and what it is you need in order to be healed. And he laid his head in the mouth of that monster. Who disappeared? And Milarepa was home, could rest and be at ease at last. I like to think he painted portraits of a few of those monsters and hung them on his family altar.